You travel the world. You're away from home, perhaps away from your family. All you have to depend on is yourself and your luggage.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Are you traveling light or heavy?
Heavy.
Flying?
Flying and by ship.
An ocean voyage?
Yes.
Very exciting. I believe I have just the thing.
TBTL!
Well, hello, good morning, and welcome to a Monday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Ooh.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
A highly paranoid, very large individual talking a bunch of nonsense.
Coming to you from, believe it or not, Orlando, Florida.
Oh, Ma, Pa, it's just beautiful.
Where we find ourselves at episode 2,999 in a collector series.
What the F?
I want you to know that that desk bell ding, it made its way to Orlando, Florida at great personal embarrassment. Because as I was going through the airport in Bellingham yesterday, they tossed my entire bag and they were just pulling out all manner of radio-related, like sound effect device, things like this, even things like this. And the look on the face of the slightly churlish TSA guy as he pulled, he might as well have pulled out like a Groucho Marx nose with the mustache and like a banana that is a squirt gun. Anyway, I brought all of it here to Florida because we have some important business to get to this week, primarily celebrating the 3,000th. episode of the program, which of course will be happening tonight at the Waffle House, just a hop, skip, and a jump from here. But before we get to that, we got to get to this here Monday episode of the show.
Let the fun begin.
And we got lots to talk about here, including something that happened to me this morning that I don't think I know in my adult life. I've never asked myself this question, and I've never typed into the internet, can I download a video game to my iPhone? But Andrew hipped me to a new video game that is out that is so funny and subversive that I was trying to learn how to play it this morning while I looked at clips of it on the internet. The game is basically just being an absolutely rude goose.
I mean, it's so rude. I can't believe it. It's so damn rude.
Your job is to go around and try to make people in the town have a terrible, terrible day. It's called Untitled Goose Game, and we will tell you about it. Plus, we've got emails and V-mails, and we have this guy, longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He might have tacos. He's not quite sure about it yet. He's been brewing coffee here in the room that's been overflowing, but that's not on him. That's on poor design by the Sheraton Airport. He is Andrew Walsh, and I say a good bon voy to you, sir.
Bon voy, my friend.
When I checked into the hotel yesterday, I was just in a weird mood, and I asked the front desk person, I said, how does it feel to say bon voy to people? She goes, terrible. It's not a real word. I was like, you want to be on our podcast? It was like the perfect response. I was expecting something more corporate.
I don't think anybody has actually said bon voy to me. I mean, aside from you and the listeners. I didn't know that they are charged at the front desk to say the actual word. I see the branding all over. In fact, when I came in, I was like, oh, Sheridan. That's also a Bonvoy property. And so the woman who was checking me in, I said, do I have to become a Bonvoy member to get Wi-Fi? And she looked at me I was crazy. And she's like, no, just log in. There's not even a password here.
I like that you had your, like, you already had your armor on.
Yeah.
You already had your hackles up for that.
Yeah, but no, she was totally on my side.
It's the opposite here. It's actually not secure enough. Any person wandering by can hack into the mainframe of your computer because there's almost no security standards here.
The password was Ukraine 69 for some reason. I don't know exactly why. No,
it's a perfect password.
I said, do I need to, you know, become a member to get free Wi-Fi? And she said, no, actually. And she started a whole PowerPoint presentation to me about why internet should be free. And
yeah. This is my kind of place.
It was called Internet is a Human Right.
Yeah.
Was the title of that one.
Yeah. Subtitle, Bonvoy.
Bonvoy. Free Wi-Fi is a human bonvoy. That's what the name of the thing.
Well, I was in some kind of a state this morning because as I put the show sheet together, I wrote that it's September the 230th.
Wait, what is happening to us?
Is that the Augustan calendar?
Are we ready for this live show tonight?
No.
Man, my brain feels broken. I feel like, I don't know, I'm feeling jittery.
Really?
Kind of.
I am feeling very good. I'll hoist you on my back like a papoose and carry you through this program tonight.
That's what I'm nervous.
There will be one set of footprints through the Waffle House.
One greasy set of footprints that go from the kitchen.
Yeah. No, I've been on a whole sort of anxiety roller coaster about this, but I'm currently at the part where I got through the scary part and it didn't kill me and now I feel elated.
What's the scary part?
Well, that the shows are going to be terrible people aren't going to like us.
So you haven't actually gotten through that part. You just emotionally got through that part.
Okay. Yeah, I was tossing and turning last night about the show. I mean, it's okay. That just happens sometimes. But then I just reached some kind of a zen place this morning, and now I feel very good. I feel like I think we're going to do a great job. I think there's people are already, I don't want to say amassing. That sounds like there's a battle that's about to happen. Mm. But I was seeing some chatter on Twitter last night that people are already driving by the Waffle House.
Oh, really?
People, like, listeners.
We should have done that, actually.
Yeah, you know, hey, if any of the listeners would like to host the show tonight, that would be fine.
Could you let me know where we should set up a stage in the Waffle House?
So they've been doing recon on the Waffle House. They've been meeting up in places. So it's happening, man. There's like this town is crawling with between 48 and 52 because that's the capacity of the Waffle House. Many TBTL listeners who are going to come out and be there for the show. No, I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be a little nerve-wracking for us just to get everything set up and to make sure it works. And there will, of course, also be the embarrassment of having to do the show not in front of the tens of listeners, but in front of the Waffle House staff.
Right.
Because this kitchen will be functional. So they'll be making food for our listeners. We have our run of the place, but they'll be looking at me and you as I say something and then as I play this.
Scatman's World.
And then as the crowd erupts into applause.
Uh-huh.
And then somebody who's working the grill will just be like, people came out for this? This is a thing? So I have to, that's something I have to get past.
Or something the kitchen will be like, yes, that's the best part of that song.
Maybe that's what we should do.
Turns out you and I are the only people on earth who didn't already completely know about that song anyway.
Scatman actually worked at a Waffle House in Dallas.
Scatman's Waffle.
So how was your trip getting out here? You and I, we took different paths to get to Orlando. I flew from Bellingham to Seattle down here. You flew from Seattle to Detroit and then down to Orlando. I do know one thing about your flight. You had killer Wi-Fi. You were like a football king in the sky.
I was. I am the king of sky football. yeah, the Browns were playing during my first flight and the Seahawks were playing during my second flight. I was not. The schedules didn't align perfectly for me to watch both games, but I was able to watch chunks of both games thanks to something that is offered on Delta, which is streaming level Wi-Fi, which was new to me because you can get Wi-Fi on planes for however much you pay for it. I think on Delta, you can get like normal speed Wi-Fi for about $7. Throw three more little bucks on there and you can like stream Netflix or possibly illegally gotten football games off of Reddit.
Wow, that's amazing. So you were able to basically watch the not strictly legal stream of a football game whilst at 35,000 feet, and it worked.
And I don't know what we decided, if we're doing a no-point conversion today or not. Probably not, or at least not in the traditional sense. So let me just say here quickly, all of our teams won, so that was a really good feeling.
Yeah.
I was sort of thinking while I was up there, like, especially for the Browns game, which was a big win. And again, I'm not going to get into the details of the game, but the Browns, it was a big win and an important win for where we are in the season. And like, I was texting with Andy Durs at one point. Andy Durs, that's what we call him, right?
Yep.
And I was like, damn it, I should be at home drunk for this shit, right? Like, I should be screaming at my TV, hooting and hollering.
Right. Because I will just say, and if this is going to stand in for the no point, let's just do this. You were 100% right, my friend. You thought that your Cleveland Browns had a good shot of going into Baltimore and winning, and I was more skeptical. And, boy, you couldn't have been more right. They went in there. They played a great game. They blocked out the haters.
They certainly
did. The Rex Ryan.
They blocked out the Ryans.
Yeah. So good stuff, man. Yeah. Congratulations.
So that was really fun. And again, I didn't get to see the big win. I got to see like the first half of that game where they looked good. And then I was kind of getting bits and pieces of information about what happened for the second half of that game as I kind of transferred planes. But here's my point. I had a moment, and I was proud of myself for my perspective on this, because I was like, you know, this is not a good way to watch these football games. But then I thought, you know what? These football games are making this a good way to fly.
Yes.
You know, like if I emphasize the football games, yeah, it's kind of a shitty way to take in a football game. But if you have to sit on a 3.5 and then a 2.5 hour flight or whatever the two of these things were, boy, the time just flies by when you can just like root for your team and every now and then just like kind of shoot a fist up in the air so that everybody on the plane thinks you're crazy.
There are a couple of airlines that have just, you know, they're just streaming regular TV. Like,
yeah, you know, Delta had some of those,
and I think JetBlue used to have that. So it was just basically like you're watching the cable feed, usually from New York City. So that would be what it'd be oriented. You'd like see the ads, like the commercials would play. You're just watching television. Mm-hmm. And I love that so much because it's the of all the things. Now, I know that, you know, other airlines have myriad on-demand products and you can binge watch mm-hmm. anything you want, and all that is well and good. But I love the experience of just watching regular TV while I'm on a plane, because it is the most like what I would be doing if I was just at home.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, other than setting up a kitchen where I could putter around and make some nachos, or, you know what I mean?
Oh, I made those on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even like cheese, but I was like, I need to make some nachos.
Is that why I made an emergency landing in Memphis?
Yes.
Because you burned the nachos? But you know what I mean? Like, the idea of sitting and watching and then changing the channel and being like, oh, what's on ESPN3? And then being like, oh, you know, just the something about being connected to the real world of television.
Mm-hmm.
If this makes any sense, makes it less boring to be on the plane, because it feels it's the most like you're just at your house.
Yes.
For me. Like, more so than picking my new favorite Netflix show to watch. All of that feels other,
mm-hmm.
but the watching of live TV. So yeah, I hear what you're saying, and that's a good way to while away the hours while in the air. I had a less great experience. I mean, on the one hand, I had a great experience, which is I was fortunate enough to get bumped up to first class, which which is super great.
And bon voy.
Indeed. I said that to everybody in first class. I thought that was the thing I was trying to fit in, and apparently I was the only one saying bon voy. But something else happened. Maybe what we should do is just take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and then I'll tell you what happened. I mentioned it on Twitter, but it was more – I felt like there was more going on. I was very disrupted by the behavior of somebody on the flight. And again, I was like, you know, listen, this is a very first worldy problem, because I happened to be in first class, which was awesome. But something that somebody was doing was really ticking me off. And it was not even actually the person doing the thing. It was the person they were flying with.
Could you hear the people in coach breathing? Was that the problem?
You know, you're not far off. I was like, please close that curtain.
My God, I'm not an animal.
Yeah, no. How about this? Quick break, and then we'll talk about that. Plus, we'll talk about Untitled Goose Game and all the other stuff coming up in a moment. It's CBTL, live from Orlando. Generationals for you on a Monday morning. This song is called Goose and Gander.
Love those hand claps.
This band, I'll tell you what, man, every time I play them on the show, I say this, but it's like, I don't know how they are not one of the most popular bands in America. Their albums are just sort of compulsively listenable. Mm-hmm. I love their music so much. And I'm assuming probably it was either a listener or probably my daughter who turned me on to them some number of years ago.
I remember that song, When We Fight, We Fight.
Yeah, it was the theme. And we used a generational song as the theme for the short-lived Luke Burbank show.
Is that,
on
it was
Cairo.
That song? I think it was, and when they fight.
But
they
I don't
fight.
Think we got yeah. to the lyrics. I think okay, it was like gotcha, a, yeah. some kind of, you know, edited version or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've always been.
It's actually kind of a. I don't think that's why you picked it, or I could be wrong, but that's actually kind of a subtle
yeah.
little statement about
totally.
Talk radio.
I know,
too,
right?
Huh? Yeah.
All right. So before the break, we were talking about the our trip out here. So here's what happened to me. I flew from Bellingham to Seattle, get on the plane in Seattle. It's this whole game of, like, am I going to get upgraded or not. Now, I figured out a Life Hack It Buddy, which is, again, this is for a very, very, very specific slice of our listening group.
This is for you and John Hodgman.
This is for me and anyone else who's medallion status.
Okay.
Which is, if you're on the waiting list to get moved up to first class and you're trying to figure out how possible it is, what I realized, it's kind of a black box. Like, I've even called the the reservation number before and said, like, I'm on the list. I'm, like, fourth on the list. Is there any chance you think I'm going to actually get moved up there? And they're often like, well, I can't see that information, or it's held at the gate or whatever. But I realized if I just go through the process of trying to buy a ticket on a flight,
right,
it shows you the first class seats that are available.
Right. So you're just like, you're. It's already day of, but you're just
yes.
pretending like you're going to buy another
yes,
ticket.
Yes, which would be like madness. I'm literally right. like in... I'm at SeaTac because I got there really early because my flight from Bellingham to Seattle got me there way before my flight from Seattle to Orlando.
Oh, yeah. How long were you hanging in the airport lounge?
Like 3 hours.
Wow. That's very un-Burbankian.
Yeah, but you know what, Andrew? The problem was the next possible flight from Bellingham down would have cut it close.
Mm-hmm.
And if that would have been an issue, then, I would. This is very far. This is much further than walking distance, I think, from Seattle. So,
do you mind me interjecting just to say, and I mentioned this to you on the phone last night, my connecting flight was way
oh,
too
yeah.
close
Let's
for
talk
comfort.
About this.
I just as a quick aside, it's been so long since I've had to run top speed through an airport.
Andrew.
Like, excuse me.
Oh, man. And Detroit, that airport is massive.
Yes.
It is so geographically huge.
I don't know how I missed this. A little bit of backstory here. I went to book a direct flight from Seattle to Orlando. Obviously, if you can do it direct, that's preferred. The only one available was pretty damn expensive,
yes.
though, so I even ran it by my bosses. I was like, I don't know if I should do this or not. You know me, I'm like Mr. Boy Scout. And they're like, yeah, go ahead and do it. But by the time I received the response, it had gone up another $100.
Jeez.
And I was just like, I can't yeah. justify this. So I found a cheaper flight that had one layover in Detroit, and I just saw that, and it looked good to me. I'm like, one layover, it's not that long. I know that I looked because I knew it wasn't that long of a layover, but that's all I knew. What I didn't realize was it might not be a long enough layover.
Right.
And as the plane landed in Detroit, I realized we were landing as my other plane was boarding. And I'm in row 42 of a giant plane. This is a huge plane. This might have been the biggest, what would you call it, like non-international
yeah,
plane.
Domestic.
Domestic. That's exactly the word I was looking for. So anyway, everything ended up being fine. I don't need to go into a million details,
dude,
but I'm in the back of the plane.
You live your whole life in such a way as to avoid those moments, and that was unavoidable.
I live my life to both have buffer room so I'm not rushed and also so I don't have to get in other people's way. And
yeah.
these two things collided because I needed to rush and I needed to tell people to move, including a little girl who was like getting off the plane. And like I was able to sneak in front of a bunch of people.
Did you knock her wheelchair over?
No, but I took her crutches.
Yeah, well, sorry.
But like I did that thing that I wouldn't usually do that you hate when people are on a plane. When they do it for no reason, I think it irritates you. Like I tried to sneak in front of several rows. Usually
sure.
I'm very good at making sure
yeah, yeah.
I go when it's my turn. But I even explained to one couple who were sitting across from each other in the aisle. I'm like, I wouldn't usually do this, but I'm going to sneak in front of you when this opens up. They're like, okay, great. And they were like on my team. And then there's a mom with two little kids, and I almost got in front of them, and then I was like, I can't do it, and I let them go. And then the little girl decides to, like, the mom and the little boy are they go to the front of the plane, they're moving, but the little girl decides to turn it into a game, and she's like using the armrests on each side of her to like hopscotch down the aisle. And
how far did you kick her?
In my brain, I am thinking of the polite way to say, okay, it's time to move on. But I'm also thinking, like, my brain is totally scrambled at this point.
Andrew.
All I want to do is get to my plane. I don't want to be in Detroit when I should be in Orlando for the live show. Yet I can't say to this little girl, hey, I have a flight I need to catch. Like, right. I'm not going to negotiate with this little girl playing hopscotch. So what came out of my mouth was a mumbled, hurry, which I don't think she even heard me. Like, but it was honestly not even me being a jerk. It was me trying to think of the right words, but my brain being scrambled.
Yeah.
Instead, it came out like some sort of a beast that just growled, hurry, at like the cutest little girl you could possibly imagine. Anyway, she
were
might
you,
have heard
were
me.
Were you in a storm drain at the time?
She's holding a little balloon that I had given her. Anyway, I get off the plane, and I did have to take a train to a different part of the airport, but luckily it didn't
dump. Hold it.
Actually, I did have to.
Hurry.
I had to pee so bad, but I was like, if I catch my flight, I'll never pee again. That was a deal I made with God. So
that was a bad deal.
Can you hand me your cup? But anyway, I did end up making it. But that is a hell of a thing. Like, I was shaking on my flight, like, from so much adrenaline.
Oh, geez, yeah. Usually, I mean, I have to say that, like, the system is not supposed to let you book, because you said when you landed and you were in row 40 that your other plane was boarding.
We were just a little bit late, not enough that it was a delay, but the plane probably landed with 10 minutes, but then it just taxied forever.
And that's where the flight crew needs to say, we have some people that have tight connections.
I tried to work that angle politely, passively. I said to the flight attendant who was sitting near me in her jump seat or whatever you call it, I said, excuse me, do you know what gate we're at? My flight is boarding right now at A4. And she's like, oh, we're at A66. And I was like, okay, this is where you pick up that thing and you say, hey, we got a little boy in the back. We have a balding little boy in the back who needs to get to the front of the plane.
Has to go wee-wee.
Yes. But she just said, she was polite, but she was just like, yeah, usually it takes them like 35 minutes to board the plane or whatever. So in other words, she was like, don't worry about it, you'll make it, which I did.
Did you look at her and just go, like, did you tell her that you're a podcaster and you don't care? Who knows it? Because that would get
I'm a podcaster and I care who knows it.
I did yell, I'm a proud boy. Was that a bad
idea?
Man.
Yeah, they had to reground the plane. Yeah. They had to ground that flight multiple times.
Anyway, this was your story. So that was my story.
I'm glad you made it. And yeah, I was trying to err on the side of caution, which you're right, is very unlike me. But I just didn't want to get, in a world where I missed my Seattle to Orlando flight and then had to like take a red eye and all of that. So I get on the plane. I'm very stoked because I have made it into first class. Did I make it into my preferred first class seat? No, but that's all right, Andrew.
How you doing?
I'm okay. Doing, I'm working through it. But so we're sitting there. The plane is not even pushed back yet. And I'm in the second row and I'm on the aisle. And next to me, so in that same row, but on the window, is a guy who we're just sitting there. And all of a sudden, I hear a sound unlike anything I've ever heard in my life. I can't even reproduce it for you here, but it was like the loudest, most sleep apneatic snore.
Oh.
Because we're sitting there. It's, it's bright daylight outside at this point. They're making the announcements. Everyone's just kind of in an expectant mood. We're about to take off. And all of a sudden, I just hear this like,
oh my God.
Like, and I look, oh God, do we need to do the Heimlich? And I look over and, no, this guy has just fallen asleep, but the second that he goes to sleep, he starts snoring, but in this, like, it's so loud that everyone in the whole front of the plane and probably into coach is like, whoa, what's going on?
Oh my God. And so it wasn't just like one choking gasp.
No.
Is his head all the way back, leaned back?
He's leaning, like his seat is not reclined because we haven't taken off yet.
Uh-huh.
But he's, leaning against, this is why the window is a good seat, because he's leaned against the wall of the airplane.
Okay.
But then he'll like kind of wake back up for a second. Mm-hmm. But then he did this the whole flight.
Oh my God.
And it was like when he would, I'm not exaggerating when I say when he would start snoring, and it would just be for these brief moments. It wasn't like continuous. I wondered if he had narcolepsy, because it was like, how do you go from being mildly awake and like to just being like,
wow.
And then everyone will go, what? So at some point, the flight attendant starts distributing earplugs.
Really?
I've never seen this move.
Really?
And everyone's like dying, kind of like, get a load of this. And I was like,
Is she saying anything? Or
nope,
she just like,
she's not saying anything. Smart. She just is walking. She has earplugs, which, again, I didn't even know they had that in their arsenal.
Uh-huh.
And she's just distributing earplugs to anybody who wants them. Funny part is, the snoring dude wakes up, takes a pair of earplugs, has no idea that he's the reason that we're getting earplugs.
Does he think that you guys are about to go into the tunnel of sound? Like, what is...
I know, what's...
What does he need them for?
He just takes them. I guess he's like, well, free earplugs.
No, what's the resale value on this? Did she also hand him, like, a CPAP machine pamphlet?
I mean, it was like... The other thing was, I was half joking when I said I didn't get, you know, I have the seat that if I happen to get into first class that I always like to be in. Mm-hmm. It's the very front of the plane on the window. And the reason I like that, and by the way, that's the last one that they fill. They think it's the worst seat.
Oh, why?
I don't know, but it's when, like,
no
whenever.
Way. That's bulkhead.
It's bulkhead and you're on a window, but there's enough bulkhead that the other person doesn't have to get up for you if you go to the bathroom. It's the perfect crime.
Maybe they're filling it last in case somebody, like, really special.
There might be some,
or
there may be something having to do with maybe it's more accessible in a certain way.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
know, but what I know is that a lot of times I just get put there by default if like all the rich people have bought their fancy seats and they're like, we'll give the road warrior his free seat in the front. But anyway, had I been in that seat, I would have been directly in front of this guy, and I would have been, to use your term, kind of rip shit.
Yeah.
Like, no offense. Like, look, none of us are in total control of ourselves while we sleep. I get that. But this was like, it was not at some point it wasn't even really funny. It was just like really distracting. Mm-hmm. It was so loud. Here is...
Was he Zoidberg? By any chance?
He just wanted to talk about mating.
That is how I'm picturing this person.
I mean, I don't want to get into too much of his physical, but let's just say he was...
I just want to talk. It has nothing to do with mating.
So here's the thing, though. This guy, he actually seemed like a really sweet dude, to be honest with you. Like, the moments that he was awake, he was very smiley, and he was talking to the person next to him, who I figured out at some point was his freaking wife.
Oh, okay.
Who did nothing.
I
who
see
what no
you're getting
point
at. Who at
no point tapped him on the leg or arm and said, handsome hubby. That'd be if they're on Wheel of Fortune together.
Okay.
Handsome hubby, you're killing us. This
that is the responsibility of the partner in the situation.
Course.
Yeah.
This lady sat there. Now I am going to for some reason talk about her look. I don't know why. She looked a lot like the daughter of Cabletown on 30 Rock.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Jack Donaghy's nemesis?
Yes, I know who you're talking about. Yep. Kind of a pageboy haircut.
She had on her She was reading some kind of romance novel on her Kindle device. She had on, and this is where it comes to these noise-canceling headphones, she had on those Bose noise-canceling headphones, the same kind he had. That's also, I mean, they were talking and, like, making physical contact. It's how I knew they were together.
Uh-huh.
But they also had matching headphones, which is the kind of thing where it's like, you got a deal on them.
Yeah.
You know, they were like Costco. They were two of them hermetically sealed or whatever. There were points in the flight where I came so close to leaning over to the lady and saying, could you please...
Right.
Could you just help us out here? And I was like, is she? I was trying so hard to figure out what was going on. Are her noise canceling headphones working so well that she doesn't hear what her husband is doing? Or is she embarrassed and she doesn't know what to do?
Does she have ear blindness?
Does she suffer?
She lives with it.
Ear blindness?
Yeah, I do think it's true that, like, I mean, I know I've been complaining a lot about how loud my elderly cat is, but I know that it is still more noticeable to people. Like, I'll notice it on the 8th caterwaul, whereas somebody visiting will notice it right away, right? I think people who have kids kind of get used to the sound of children. Then when a childless couple like me and Genevieve are in a room, we're like, it'll be much more kind of bracing to us.
Sure, your brain starts to just kind of move those repetitive sounds into the background of your mind
as
a survival technique.
So that might have been it.
I don't think that could have happened with this because this was explosive. I mean, it was explosive. It was distracting. It was confusing. It was medically problematic. It was a lot of things. And at no time did this woman just simply tap her husband on the shoulder and go, okay, sorry, hon, you're really...
Yeah, like, I would do that for Genevieve if she... I mean,
I would hope that you would do it for me as friends.
Of course I would.
Like, it was...
Well, I'd record it first.
Yeah, of course. No, I mean, it's all got to be hashtag content.
Right, yes.
Anyway, I was like, maybe, because my harangue on this show is always about how that's not how noise-canceling headphones work. That's not how any of this works.
Well, have you ever worn noise-canceling headphones?
I've worn those exact Bose ones. Own those
somewhere. Okay, yeah.
And, you know, I'll tell you, they are good on the plane because they really knock down a ton of background noise. And they make – one of the things is when you're using conventional AirPods or, like, you know, these kind of Mac headphones, mm-hmm. the white ones that everyone has, sometimes it's actually hard to get the volume high enough on an airplane if you're mm-hmm. listening to a podcast or something. Yeah. By the way, I'm listening to a new podcast called Who the Hell is Hamish? It's out of Australia because everything, including our top story today, everything's coming up Australian in our life. But this guy ran a major, major scam. He was like the biggest con man in Australia. But anyway, sometimes when you're listening on regular headphones, you can't hear it, or mm-hmm. it's you know, but that's where the noise canceling stuff really helps in my experience. It knocks down so much background noise and it really moves the thing you're listening to the sort of front of your experience. I mean, I guess it's possible that was just blocking out the snorers, blocking out the snorers. But like, I was dealing with real feelings of resentment towards this woman the whole flight because it never stopped.
Yeah, I definitely think that this is more on her than him.
Yeah.
Because, like, you don't know. There have been times when I've woken up on an airplane and I just think that I've been snoring. First of all, I don't think I've ever really slept more than 45 seconds consecutively on an airplane.
Right.
I may have, but it never feels that way. Yeah. Like, I am just a not. If I can fall asleep on a plane at all, I am nodding. I'm constantly in this state of, like, asleep for a second, then waking up.
Which is the worst.
It's not a great feeling.
It's like, that's how they kill rats in the studies. They put them on a, you know, you know this thing, right?
No, I thought you were just joking.
No, they. This is part of how, you know, they don't understand why we need sleep, but they know that we need it, because they will do these experiments, which is really terrible, actually, where they'll put a rat on a platform that keeps shifting it can never go to sleep. And then eventually it just dies.
Oh,
I know, right?
God.
I know. Even rats. It's like, cut them a break. But it's that thing. You're sitting there on the plane and your head keeps going. Or people remember it from being in college or high school where, I mean, if you're not allowed to put your head down on the desk and you're just in that, like, nodding. Like a couple of nodders. That is a nightmare.
You saying that actually reminds me of the specific smell of whatever disinfectant they used on desks.
Wow.
Remember when you'd have to put your head down? Yep. All right, class, put your head down. And then, like, after a couple of minutes, it starts to, like, kind of get a little...
Did you guys play Thumbs Up, 7-Up when you were in, like, grade school?
We did play 7-Up, but I thought we raised our hands. I never heard Thumbs Up, 7-Up.
Oh, the way we played it in Seattle was you didn't raise your hand. You put your head down on your desk, and then you put your hand up, and you put your thumb up.
Okay.
And there was some part of the game with someone would come by and put your thumb down.
Yeah, somebody's at the front of the room. I can't remember what the point of that game was.
My life revolved around Thumbs Up, 7-Up when I was a kid. I was like, oh, please let this be the day we're going to play Thumbs Up, 7-Up.
That'd be such a good heist situation, too. Like, during 7-Up, like, who stole all the erasers or what have you. Don't remember what I was... Oh, you know, I don't hate the nodding, actually. Oh. Because it still makes the time pass better than being fully awake. Like, I never drink coffee on an airplane. Like, I'm hoping to have the sweet release of sleep, even if it's nodding. But back to the snoring thing, there have definitely been times where I've woken up and I just have this feeling in the back of my throat, and I'm like, oh no, is that snoring feeling? Do I have them old airplane snoring blues again, mama? And
they're trying to leave that in the clear.
I will turn to Genevieve and be like, was I snoring?
I am a proud boy.
Anyway, so I'm mortified, but I also can't control it. If you're falling asleep,
Yeah.
Like, you can try to keep yourself awake, but you are who you are. But yeah, if you're flying with somebody, the only situation would be like, if we were flying with like a boss. Like, I don't know that I could turn to my boss and be like, wake up, you're snoring really loud. But aside from that relationship, I think anybody else, I'd step in.
But even if it was a boss, I wouldn't tell them wake up, but I would do something to make them wake up.
Oh, interesting.
I would just bump into their shoulder, right, or like I would, you know, I would ideally they wouldn't trace it back to me. Mm-hmm. Like I'd move my seat up and down or something. I mean, I would just do something intentionally to break their slumber.
You would just slowly take a pillow and press it over their face.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I do a quick little crossover here? Little crossover content.
Yeah.
This is something that I learned on Spotless via a listener who wrote in.
Your fine cleaning podcast you host with Hannah Brooks Olson.
I've got to make a podcast about commercials about cleaning. That would be the final, just like all cleaning commercials podcast. Don't use airplane blankets, people. Don't use airplane pillows or blankets. I am told that they are not cleaned. If there's somebody in this listening audience who knows otherwise, get at me. But apparently somebody knows something about these blankets that are not washed. They are merely folded and put back into the plastic bags that make it seem like they are clean.
Here's my theory on this.
Well, can I just say one thing? Yes. The person who wrote in claimed, and I have no reason not to trust this person, that they... My life, by the way, is divided into the moment from before I knew this story until after. She said that she pulled out a blanket and found an old baby turd.
No!
Because somebody was changing their baby using the blanket, apparently didn't clean it all up, and then it got refolded and put into the plastic bag.
Okay. That's troubling.
It's troubling.
But, and thank you for putting your evil inside all of us.
Yes.
Honestly, and thanks to that listener.
I tell people this. Like, this is my new thing in life. Yeah. I tell people, do not use airplane blankets.
Well, the thing is, a couple things. One, airplane blankets are kind of going the way of the dodo bird.
Oh, like, true? I've never used one.
I asked for an airplane blanket yesterday, first time in a long time I've ever done that, and because it was really cold on our flight, and they were like, oh, we don't have those anymore. So,
did they give you any baby turds?
Yeah, plenty of those. First class, it's all baby turds. Oh, yeah. All the baby turds you can eat.
And they serve them in a real glass, which
is
nice.
Yeah, they do. And they give you a hot towel afterwards, which is nice.
I apologize. That's gross.
You get to use real silverware, which I appreciate. I feel like a human. But back in the olden days, and same thing with pillows, like those have just kind of gone away. Now, I think international flights, it's different because there's going to probably be some sleeping. But for domestic flights, I actually don't think they do that very much anymore. But the thing that I remember from when they used to have blankets was they would be sealed. Like, you'd have to tear, like, on Delta.
Okay, then maybe this person is just a big liar.
Well, no, I mean, it could be airline specific. It could be this particular one. But a lot of the reason that I had at least some faith in airport or airplane blankets was because, at least on the, I can't remember specifically which airline, but I remember them being totally like sealed in plastic. So it was like, I knew they had been washed.
Then that's good.
And then resealed into plastic, not just put, I would never use a blanket that had just been put back into some kind of plastic bag that, you know, didn't indicate it was sort of getting a refresh.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's really good to know, because maybe the lesson here is don't use a blanket unless it's clearly hermetically sealed, because that actually makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, I don't know why this person would just lie to me. No, it's probably airline specific. Like, who knows?
Yeah. But oh, my God, that would be like, that would be very, very hard for me to come back from.
Yes.
Hey, you know what it's time for? Wow.
I forgot your version.
It's time
of this is
to
a
listen
muddy.
To the thank you music underwater. We may not, unlike James Cameron and that rich Italian, we may not be able to go to the deepest part of the ocean, but we can listen to a recording of this song that was made at the deepest part of the ocean.
That's right. This is recorded using those underwater microphones that they use on the whale watching tour.
Exactly. It's a beautiful whale song that we use to say thank you to the people who support the program. Let's thank Kelvin Woke of Fort Collins, Colorado.
Totally woke.
Stay woke. I think we probably made that joke last year. I bet you that last year Kelvin supported us, and last year woke had come into our lexicon.
Uh-huh.
So, Farron Shear of San Diego, California. Jill Jackson of Lakewood, Ohio. What?
Lakewood, Ohio?
That's
I
your
lived
old
in Lakewood. Yes, I know we've talked about that before.
Jill, can you go check out that donut shop that Andrew used to hang out at?
Oh, that's in North Olmsted. We already got eyes on that. But check out Lake Erie Screw. Make sure that they're still using forklifts in the middle of the night.
Okay. William Sonnenberg of San Francisco, California. Michael Havens of Tumwater, Washington. And then Carolyn Oliver Haushalter of Allison Park, PA. Thank you, Carolyn. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, William. Thank you, Jill. Thank you, Farron. And thank you, Kelvin. We would not be in this hotel room in Orlando, Florida, getting ready for our 3,000th episode.
Eep.
If not for all of you. I think my friend Andrew said it well when he said, eep. So thanks. Thanks for making the show possible. I like this. This would be like if you were listening to it on a jukebox in 1966.
I like it too.
This would be the like recording quality level.
I just love this song so much. I'm really glad it's our thank you music because it's the only, it might be the only song on earth that doesn't get old for me.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, let's talk about this video game. Called Untitled Goose Game. Andrew, you sent this to me yesterday, and you said that there were some dazzling deets in this story. And boy, you did not oversell it.
I love how this story came to me, too. You know our new friend Brandy Brown, who joined us at the Minnesota State Fair when we did that live show? And I started following her on Twitter for fair-related content. But now that the fair's over, she's still, I mean, I find her feed very enjoyable, but also confounding because she is following things in pop culture that I just have no idea what's going
on. Those are great people to follow on Twitter, too, because you just get this whole, you know, this just wide range of things that you just would never find out on your own.
But it's never presented in the way that I need it to be presented for a 42-year-old man.
It doesn't come with a link to Know Your Meme that explains the meme.
And so I always have to be like, what is Brandy talking about here? And then I have to like work backwards. So I saw that she has tweeted a picture of a cartoon goose and just said something like, oh no, you bad goose or something. I was like, that's a paraphrase. I don't remember exactly what the joke was. It might have been a retweet. But anyway, I'm like, what is going on with this goose? I start searching around.
I really hope
around.
I didn't step on you saying, oh no, you bad goose. Because that's a primo drop.
There's also possibly a show title for today. But
yeah.
So I just saw that people were, I'm like, I'll type goose into Twitter, see what happens. A lot of people, I keep seeing the same goose pop up all over the place. Finally, I get to some safe ground. The New York Times, which has written an article about this just 2 or 3 days ago. The headline is, "This video game fulfills your fantasy of being a horrible goose." And I was like, you got my attention. I was also trapped on an airplane with spotty Wi-Fi, so that's probably also why I was going down this particular goose hole at this moment. But apparently in Australia, a couple of coders... Are you writing down goose hole?
I am.
A couple of coders had an inside joke at their workplace where I think they like somebody sent out a stock photo of a goose, and they said, we should make a video game about this goose. Look how weird looking it is. Look at its ankles, and it's grumpy all the time. And I believe the quote was, yeah, people are kind of scared of geese. Not like you'd be scared of a poisonous snake, but more like kind of a social awkwardness. I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but I'm pretty sure I'm close to that. And so they started joking around about making a game where a goose just goes around a prim and proper English neighborhood being annoying, stealing things, honking at the wrong time, scaring people, interrupting people who are trying to paint outdoors by scaring them. And they just released it, I think, kind of as a lark, called the Untitled Goose Game, or they released a preview for it.
Yeah, so in 2017, these guys at this video game design company in Australia, by the way, the piece in the New York Times was by Tacey Richter, and it's really good, as you've already kind of indicated. Back in 2017, they had this idea, like you already described, how it started to come about, which was just like riffing on this picture of a goose, talking about their ankles are weird. And like you said, talking about the fact that it's not that you're afraid of And this so checks out with my life, particularly as a jogger around geese. It's like if geese are not, we're in Florida. If I see a goose, it's not like I see an alligator.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to, I don't think it's going to kill me, but I also think it's possibly going to menace me.
Yeah.
It's a socially awkward, it's an awkward moment that somehow below, it's not so scary that you think you're going to die, but it's not just free and easy. Like if you were to see a robin or some other little, even a squirrel or something.
I got chased by a goose on my bike once when I was a kid. Scared the living, a whole thing of geese came after me. A gaggle, I guess.
I think it was a gaggle. The studio is called House House. And in 2017, they made this little trailer for the game, and the trailer was so like well received and viral, but then they've been building the game now.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are in 2019, the game is finally out, and it is.
And they never gave it a title because it became kind of viral with the name Untitled Goose Game.
How perfect is that?
Untitled Goose Game.
I love it. I love everything about the people that made this game. I love everything about this game's popularity. I love that they're using Debussy, Preludes. Like the music that they use, they took this like these well known pieces by Debussy, and they re recorded them on piano. The game's composer Dan Golding recorded the music and then chopped it up to create phrases that react to gameplay as a live piano player might have done to Charlie Chaplin's slapstick. So it's kind of that, you know, that like sort of saloon piano that would play as Charlie Chaplin would be going and doing his thing. They sort of have that going. In fact, I'm going to just, I don't know if this is going to work on the fly, but I'm going to play you the teaser off my computer, which will have a little bit of this music. I find the music just to be one of the most lovely parts of it. So the goose has gone into a hedge and now it just stole the digging trowel of this poor guy who was just trying to work on his house. And now the guy's walking away and the goose is going to go up and just bite him on the hand. And now the guy's chasing the goose. Now the guy can't find the goose. He's confused. He's scratching his head. The goose has stolen his keys, is taking them into the garden, and is basically honking with the keys in the middle of this like flower garden. Anyway, the idea that you would just go around and menace people as this goose, I completely understand the appeal of this. Like, this seems like, I don't get your Minecraft stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so funny because there are descriptions of the game in this article that are very similar to sort of the way you've described Minecraft to me and what the appeal is. The idea that you're just kind of in this other world and you're puttering around and the stakes are very low in a way, but it kind of engages your mind to a certain degree, but not overly so. All this stuff. That's basically how people describe this. And for the first time, if for any video game, I've been like, oh, I get that. That would be kind of this. I could see this being just a nice thing to do to just turn your mind off for an hour or two.
I read this on the plane and I immediately tried to download it, but it's not for, I don't think they have a mobile version yet.
Right. That's what I was Googling this morning. So that you can do it for PC or Mac. It's, by the way, it's $15.
Yeah. I'm going to download it at home. I have my work computer here. They won't let me download it.
Yeah, maybe those permissions are good. I am going to totally download this game onto my laptop and give it a whirl.
Yeah. I also like that it was somewhat born out of their bias against like English towns.
Oh, right.
They're just like, there's something so fussy about an
Can
English
I read
town.
The quote?
Yeah, please.
This is from one of the House developers that they loved, quote, the kind of Englishness that can seem very proper and prim, which runs very counter to the chaotic course of the goose. Because they had actually kind of grown up like watching British television. This is Jacob Strasser, one of the creators of the game, said the village was a nod to the British television programs he and his friends grew up watching on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, like Brum, a children's show with a sentient vintage motor car. So it was just this kind of like idea of how frustrating it would be to these proper British people to just have this mayhem.
Yes.
What is it, chaos?
Yes.
Chaos monkey? Chaos goose? Just doing all this stuff in the town?
I am not saying this to make you feel self-conscious, but I think you said mayhem. That's what I say, too, and Genevieve makes fun of me.
Oh, it's supposed to be mayhem?
Mayhem.
Yeah.
Because she's like, we're not sitting down to eat a big mayhem.
Although
I always say mayhem.
I now have found out about this fake pork product called Mayhem.
Yeah, really?
I'm going to have it this Easter.
Oh, so, I mean, there is something Eastery about
Mayhem. Can I turn the hive mind on to something real quick? I'm already thinking about Thanksgiving. It's one of my favorite. It is my favorite holiday. And luckily for me, the turkey is honestly not the...
Yeah.
I like the turkey, and particularly, my mom doesn't hear this because I love my mom very much, but when my brother-in-law, Josh, is able to do the cooking of the turkey or play a significant role... Chef's kiss. Mm-hmm. So good. I mean, it's good no matter what. But I'm really into the mashed potatoes. I'm really into all the other accoutrements. Mm-hmm. But what I'm wondering is if anybody out there has come across an actually convincing mm-hmm. fake turkey mm-hmm. product, get at me. Because I'm going to bring some little portion of fake turkey with me so I can have that.
Is there any... Actually, the rest of the spread should be okay. I mean, you know, the stuffing... I don't know how your family makes the stuffing. Oh, my God. I am so hungry right now, by the way.
We don't usually go... You should have eaten an entire pizza in your room last night. By the way, my vegan thing's going great.
Yeah.
But, we don't do sausage stuffing or things like that. Well, that's not true. We have done that occasionally. My sister Liz, when she went to Connecticut for grad school, she lived with a family... back there who were like just kind of the mom named Sandy was just like an amazing cook and sort of taught Liz all these cooking techniques. So we have had a sausage stuffing in our family that has been delicious. But most of the other stuff, the stuffing, I actually don't even care about stuffing that much. Mm. Stuffing's, I get that it's flavorful and stuff, but it's a weird thing overall to me. Is it like been in the bird or not? Mm-hmm. Just kind of like, why do we have to do that mm-hmm. as part of it? But that being said, mashed potatoes are a go. Biscuits are a go. Mm-hmm. Butter, let's be honest, is a go. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe the gravy, but I don't even care but I don't even care about gravy that much.
Really? Yeah. So, no, I've really, I mean, when I was a kid, I wouldn't probably touch stuffing and certainly not gravy. I was notoriously anti-gravy as a kid. Now, like, if you put a thing of stuffing and gravy in front of me right now, I'd bite your hand off as you placed it down. You draw back a stump, as Genevieve says.
Can we get, do you think they'll do a traditional Thanksgiving dinner for us at Waffle House tonight?
They could. They should.
Yes.
And maybe they would.
Yes. They could, but should they?
But should they? I was, I went a little gallivanting last night.
How was your gallivant?
I went a little bit harder than I should have. I was a little bit worried about falling asleep so early, you know, by our time standard now that I'm on the East Coast.
Well, just eat an entire pizza and you'll just, believe me, that'll knock you right out.
Oh, turns out beer and whiskey does a similar thing to me, as a matter of fact. So we're staying in this area of Orlando that's right by the hotel, or right by the airport. So it's
called the Sad Town District.
Yeah, so I mean, everything is, like, literally the closest restaurant is a Hooters, and then everything else is like a chain restaurant of some sort. And so I was looking for a place that wasn't a chain restaurant, and the only place I could find, and I also had the idea, I'm like, oh, maybe I should find some place that serves some sort of, like, just cheap seafood, like baskets of fried shrimp or
that
something.
That famous inland central Florida. I mean, we're not that far from coasts.
I mean, I would eat that almost anywhere if it's deep fried enough. Yeah. But I did find a place called Fish on Fire, which is not a chain.
Fish is on fire.
I love that song.
Me too.
And I thought it might actually be a lesser known chain. I wasn't sure what I was getting into. Actually, I walked up. It's like, it was kind of like a little dive bar with decent food. And I liked the vibe. It was a little bit too well lit. That was my only concern with it. But it had like a bar that you could sit in on the outside or the inside. So it had a little bit of that Florida vibe that I liked. And I met some guy at the bar there who liked my Rainier's hat, and he recognized the R. By the way, do you know how or why our minor league team ended up with the same logo as the beer? Did the minor league team just decide that the Rainier R from the beer company is so iconic that they were going to use it for their own team? Because I was trying to explain it to him that it's not just a beer logo last night, and then I tried to Google like how both entities ended up with the same logo, and there has not been any good cross-cut reporting on that.
That is a good question. My guess would be that the the beer came first?
I think so, because the team has been around since 1960, I learned yesterday, but they were not the Rainiers all that time. The organization has been around, right, but they didn't become the Rainiers until 1995.
Yeah, so they probably realized that that was an iconic name for, you know, something, yeah, in the Northwest. And also, you know, we're in the shadow of Mount Rainier, so it, yeah, kind of made sense. You know what's funny? I have that Rainiers hat. I was deciding which hats to bring. Yeah. And I left my Rainier's hat at home because I was like, Walsh has one, I and then one. We'll have Hat Echo.
That's right.
So I'm wearing my Chianti hat, which everyone thinks is a Chianti.
Oh, I thought it was a yogurt.
Whenever anybody sees this hat, they're like, oh, a Chianti, you must really love the wine. And I'm like, I do. But
what is Chianti?
It is just this arts organization in Marfa, Texas that this guy Donald Judd started. And I just liked the hat. And I thought the organization was really cool, too. But people, no one knows what the hell this hat is. But anyway, so you struck up a nice conversation.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what you said that spurred this conversation on. Other than
you were gallivanting.
I was gallivanting, and I think that the idea of podcasting came up. Oh, because we're talking about our Waffle House thing tonight.
Yeah,
and you know me, when I'm just hanging out by myself, meeting strangers, I don't usually lead with,
no,
hi, I'm on a podcast.
Right.
Ask me about my podcast.
Yeah.
I gotta stop wearing the ask me about my podcast shirt, though.
Yeah.
Because then people ask me about it. Like, oh, you wouldn't like it.
Yeah. It's a nice shirt, though. I mean, I get
really
why
nice.
You keep wearing it.
It's slimming.
That's
and that's
it.
What I really like
that's,
about
that
it.
That is how every decision I make about clothing is based on, does it seem slimming or not?
Oh, my God. But anyway, but you sit there long enough and the conversation becomes like, you know, what do you do? What are you doing in town? And so eventually, I'm trying to explain this Waffle House thing. I almost, we are packed to the gills. I shouldn't even say this because the listeners will be mad who couldn't get
you
in.
You almost invited
us. We are
this
packed
dude.
To the gills. But he showed so much interest in what is going on at the Waffle House. I need to see what the hell you guys do. I almost said, come on by. But
that's nice to hear, because I'm very much like you, which is that I would rather talk about anything on earth with a stranger,
uh-huh,
other than what we do for our job, because it's just, I feel weird about it. It's hard to explain, but the only thing worse than mentioning it and getting a strong response from somebody is getting no response.
Yeah,
then
that's true too.
Really? Dude,
I don't think I get really dude about it.
Well, because
I get embarrassed, like, oh, did I force it into the conversation?
The reason I get really dude is because it's a weird thing that we're able to do this for our job. Again, shout out to our Underwater Rhymes donors of the day.
That's right, yeah.
That would be the most meta thing we could do, is play the Digital Underground song Underwater Rhymes.
Is that what that reference is?
Thank you, baby. But anyway, it'd be like if somebody said, I'm a professional paper airplane maker. I'd go, okay, let's
stop the show.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because that's not a thing that I think could be real.
Right.
It's not that I'm, all sort of high on our supply of podcasting. Lord knows, listeners of the show know that you and I just wallow in self-doubt about this. That being said, if I was at a bar and I was like, hey, what do you do for a living? And somebody said, professional pickleball player, I'd go, whoa, mm-hmm, okay, that's a thing?
Right.
How does that work? That would be my interest in it. And the fact that somebody will just hear, to me, it's just like this thing where it's weird, because I don't want to have every conversation be, despite my obvious narcissism, I really don't want every conversation to be about me if I'm at a barbecue, mm-hmm, or if I'm, but when the person you're talking to asks you zero questions about yourself, or asks you a question and he's like, what do you do? Oh, I'm a, I'm Finnish carpenter or whatever, not from Finland. Mm-hmm. I do the last round of the, what do you do? Oh, well, I host a podcast. So anyway, more about finished carpentry. Mm-hmm. It's like,
I would find that interesting too, though.
Well, yeah. And we would have talked. Believe me, I got a million questions.
Yeah, right.
How do you not hit your thumb when you got that goose honking
right?
at you?
How do you handle the goose situation? do you read? You know, the funny thing is, the reason me and this guy, who may actually be listening, I mean, he took down the name of the podcast. He seemed very interested in it. He was very excited that I have found this bar, because he's like, I hate Orlando. You can't find any authentic places around here. He's like, how did you find this place? I was like, I kind of lucked on it. He's like, do you know the bar Shorty's in Seattle? Whenever I'm in, I'm just like,
wow.
Oh, you're my kind of guy.
Yeah.
Like, Shorty's, for those who don't know, is a, well, they just moved recently into a new location, but
now they're called Tollies.
medium height friendos. But wow.
So you and this guy.
So this
really
guy
kind
is
kind of,
you know, that we like the same kind of establishments, the kind of non-chain kind of places. And but what really got the thing rolling, I think, was we were talking about that a little bit. And then he mentions what he does, which is he might be listening, although we're an hour into this, so I would assume that we've blown him away by now.
I already sang "This Fish Is on Fire," which is
that's usually a highlight of the show.
We see a mass exodus from the program.
But he did with his job what I usually do with my job, which is I tried to fast forward by it, and I saw what it was like when I could see him mentally trying to push the fast forward button.
Yeah,
we're talking about how he gets up to Seattle every now and then for work. I'm like, what do? I drive a truck for a dance company. And I say a dance company, and I do a little, again, this is several beers, and I said a dance company, and I kind of imitated dancing in my bar stool for a second.
I can absolutely see you doing this, honestly.
And you've seen me in my fair share of bar stools. And he said, yeah, dance company. And he imitated me.
I love
it. And then just moved on and like let no room in the conversation for follow-up questions. But then later on, we came back around to it because I said, it came back to him driving this truck and something about the equipment that he drives around. And I'm like, listen, I have an 80-pound thing of gear that was shipped to me by by my home office that I was astounded to see how big and heavy it was when I got here. And I've got to go take that to a Waffle House tomorrow and turn a Waffle House into a Waffle Home. Into some sort of a venue. And then we were off and rolling, and he's like, okay, we're kind of in the same thing here. And we start talking, and what he does, I won't say the name of the actual company, but
is it Alvin Ailey?
It is not Alvin Ailey.
Is it the Joffrey?
It's the Joffrey.
Dang,
no, what
I only know two dance companies, and that's it was one of the two.
I should have pushed your luck. It's interesting because he's like, we don't get anywhere interesting anymore because the type of stuff that I do is always setting up at some sort of convention center at a hotel on the outskirts of a city.
Yeah.
And it turns out what he does is he works for a company that does like these intensive 1-week dance camps for kids. They'll roll into a city. The professional dancers will like train them for a week. Uh-huh. And then they have their big performance at like the Sheraton Airport, convention center. And apparently, though, these are big events because he's driving a full 18-wheel truck full of like equipment that he drives from place to place, and that I don't know if he actually is active in the setting up. I mean, they must have huge teams.
Yeah.
But I mean, that is a job where, I mean, we talked about that for a while. That is fascinating to me.
Absolutely. I bet you anything the Stubot has spent
more
than an hour or two in some similar situation because of my nemesis' appreciation of dance.
Yeah.
But a couple things. Number one, that guy's 100% going to listen because dude's job is to be sitting in a truck.
That's true.
A to point B.
Yeah.
So we'd like to welcome new P1 and future donor,
Steven,
to the program. I was going to call him Tazo because that's the tea bag that I'm staring at in the kitchen of your hotel room. Tazo was going to be a bad guess. So
yeah,
I'm glad I didn't go with
Steve,
that.
Steve, I think that's
Steve. So welcome to the show, Steve. But I was going to say like that is totally interesting because there is my nieces have done this. There's this thing called like the Montana Children's Theater Group or something. And that's like the theater version of that. So they come into a town and they cast a play and they learn a play. It's like a week or 2 weeks, like a camp. And they they put the play on at the end. And it's a cool idea because the kids get to do something fun. The parents get to come to it. It's all kind of, sort of one-stop shopping. So I can totally see how this works. But see, I find that totally interesting as an idea because it gets into sort of how we entertain ourselves. It's a question of like screen time or non-screen time. These kids that are doing this dance, it gets into like what is the effect of those shows? Like, so you think you can dance? And is that like creating a whole new customer base for this because kids are seeing dance on TV more?
And any kind of a traveling performance I find interesting too, like it seems Shakespearean, right?
Yeah, totally. Did you watch the Ballad of Buster Scruggs?
I saw everything except for that's the one that's divided into several stories.
Yeah, the Coen brothers kind of Western. Did you see the one with Liam Neeson.
Yeah, that's the really dark. Well, they're all. That's the really dark one. Yeah, they're all really dark. Yeah, that's the one with the kid, right?
Yeah, the kid who's they're kind of performing. They're going around and putting these little performances on in different towns. The performance of that guy was kind of incredible, by the way.
Really
good. I
would
have watched that in the 1800s.
Liam Neeson plays the kind of the person who
has this, like,
travels around.
Yeah, has
him.
A kind of a carriage that doubles as a little, like, basically a stage. They can kind of open the back of it and do these performances. And he's got this kid with him, this young man who doesn't have any arms or legs and who gives these incredible performances, these monologues. And then we'll just say things don't go great for the family at the end. But yeah, I looked that guy up.
The kid. Yeah. Has he been in other things? It was an incredible performance.
Yeah. Nothing else that I've seen. But yeah, that guy was really talented. Anyway, this is my whole point. What new listener Steve does is interesting.
Yeah.
And what most people do is interesting in one way or another. So maybe you and I, we should learn to not hit fast forward so quickly when describing things to people. But I'm also right to be butthurt when people don't find it at all interesting.
Right. Well,
I think that's the takeaway, is that my anger is well placed.
I do think, though, that the fascination or the idea that what we do is super interesting, I mean, just. And I'm not saying this is a joke, but the idea of podcasting is not as mysterious as it used to be.
I agree.
And, like, the guy who is also, the bartender who kind of jumped in on the conversation, he also might be listening now. I don't remember his name.
His name
Sorry.
Is Tazo.
But he was a good bartender, and I like your establishment, sir. But, you know, he started describing one of his favorite podcasts, or his favorite podcast, and it sounds almost exactly like what we do, only...
That story doesn't check
it's
out.
It's a couple of radio guys who had, like, a morning
white
show.
White guys?
I would
of
assume.
A certain age?
But there are a couple of guys who were, like, DJs in town. They had a pretty popular, like, banter-ish kind of show.
Bubba the Love Sponge?
Probably more, it was Orlando-specific. And, you know, he kind of gave me their backstory and how one of them got fired or something like that. I mean, the parallels were very there. And then they, you know, became a podcast, and now they do it every day, and it's basically like an AM radio or a talk radio format podcast.
Yeah, my expectation is not that somebody will be like, oh my God, you are so cool, or this is so unusual to have a podcast, because everybody has a podcast at this point. Again, it's just like if I was, what do you do? I'm a professional hang glider. Be like, it's just the idea that, like, if somebody says, what do you do for your job? I host a podcast. It's like, now, I guess it also speaks to people not, what I think is interesting about the fact that we do this is that we actually do it for our job. But that gets into way more prior knowledge about how hard it is to actually make a living in podcasting.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, somebody who isn't, like, following the industry closely.
I know, but it's like, follow it. I'm going to start following dance, weekend dance troops. I mean, that's
what
whatever.
Is the trade magazine for weekend dance troops?
Oh, man. Give me a second. I'm going to come up with something, and it's going to be mediocre.
Thank God it's dancing.
Yeah.
TGID.
Jazz hands? No.
All jazz hands on deck.
Like, I don't know. I guess it's just this. Why can't I just end a conversation when I'm behind? And why do I have to get more behind? This is the thing. I will occasionally. This is just sounds so. I can't believe I'm about to say this. This is just.
Go ahead and turn down the microphone so you can just get it out of your system.
I just hope everybody hears this after the Waffle House show, because if they hear this, they probably won't want to come. I just am very curious about the world, and when I'm constantly consuming information, and I'm interested in the world, and, like, I'm interested in small details of the world. None of that is my way of saying I'm smart or I am myself an interesting person, but I'm just curious about the world, and there will be – this is the part that's, like, so supremely just cocky of me to say, but there will be times where I'll be talking to somebody and they'll say, oh, how do you know about that? And I'll be like, because I live in the world. Like, I enjoy knowing about things, even things that aren't relevant to my life. Like, if I'm reading a magazine article and there's a little detail, I might Google it because I'm like, oh wow, that's a thing. And, like, that's how my brain works. And sometimes when I bump up against someone who doesn't, their brain doesn't work that way, I'm a little let down. Like, somebody who just doesn't, they're just not curious about the world at all. And by the way, that doesn't describe new listener Steven or new listener Tazo the bartender.
Right.
Like, these people sound great. And it sounds like that was why that was a fun place for you to be at. But when I'm out in the world, I guess a lack of what I think of as a lack of curiosity sometimes from people, not just about me, but about just everything. Like, how does why do the things in this world happen the way they happen? And mm-hmm. like, that's just, I just don't have a lot to say to somebody who just is incurious about the world.
Yeah.
Are you going to bail me out? Or are you going to throw more dirt on me?
I'm going to throw myself under some
good.
Dirt.
Okay, like, good. I need company
but
down here.
I don't want... I have some good emails I'd like to get to that I think are better than what I'm about to say. But because now it's going to turn into me like saying how dumb I am and then you building me up because you don't want me to feel bad about myself.
I don't
myself,
have to do the build it up
okay,
part.
Okay, don't do it. Don't do it. But like, I worry about myself. If I used to be more intellectually curious than I am now... maybe hanging out with people like you and Genevieve who do like not just go out and obtain information but also retain information in a way that my brain doesn't do. And I had a weird thought as we were landing in Florida. As you know, I'm an aisle seat guy, so I don't usually get that nice view of the city that I'm landing in, but I kind of got a little peek of it out the row that I was sitting in, and I just had this immediate kind of, I don't even know if it was a thought so much as a sensation of like, wow, it's cool. Like, even here in the middle of Orlando, which, as we said, is kind of like a theme park land and a lot of like chain restaurant land and like very developed in a certain way, it's still really interesting that we live in a country that has such varied biodiversity. Like, I didn't think the word biodiversity, but like, Florida is still freaking fascinating. And that I just like a few hours ago was in, you know, Motown, and a few hours before that I was in Seattle, and all of those places are so different. And I was just struck by this moment of landing in Florida and just being like, man, I'd really like to get in the wilds of Florida. I don't know what it was. Like I say, it was almost sensation more than a thought about how interesting of a country we live in, just kind of speaking of nature. But then I thought, yeah, but what are you going to do about it, idiot? Like, you don't even read articles about nature. You don't watch documentaries. I mean, that's the lowest bar. You don't go out into nature. Like, I've been, like, since we arrived in Orlando, I came to this hotel. I went to a bar. I came back to this hotel. I have not left the hotel today. It is, what, noon? Like, all I have seen is the inside of this hotel room. Yet, I'm like, oh, wow, man, we really live in a fascinating world. That's you not building me up. Okay. Sounds good. Well, oh, wait.
If it's any consolation, I've been out of the hotel less than you. At least you gallivanted last night. I just ate an entire pizza while watching Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, well, but Sunday Night Football is a documentary about the marshlands of Florida, right?
But I will say this. I am also, for all of the traveling I do, I am still amazed that you can be in one place in the morning and a different place in the afternoon, and doing, like, particularly because of some of the job stuff for me, it'll be like, oh, I'm going to do TBTL in the morning, and then I'll be like, listen, Portland to Bellingham, we're not talking about a super huge leap, but the idea that I could be doing TBTL at my house and then doing Livewire, and then the next morning I'm doing TBTL mm-hmm. at my house, that still kind of surprises me. And we're talking about, that's a quick hop. That's not Seattle to Orlando. That's just, you know, Bellingham to Portland. But yeah, the fact that we can travel these vast distances, and that the way the technology allows us to still be connected and to do productive work. And I wrote a CBS story yesterday. This is weird because you're kind of beating yourself up over the fact that you're not watching more nature docs, and I'm building myself up because I was like writing a TV story. But it's like, just the fact that I was able to sit on my computer and make this thing that will eventually be on TV while I was flying from one thing to mm-hmm. another, the technology of that is amazing to me. And I have those same thoughts and feelings all the time. And I wish I was a more curious person about nature and about things like that. I mean, I've been trying to get out in a little bit more, but I don't know. I think, yeah, now I am going to build you up and say that, I mean, one of the things I like about you and why I think that this show is fun for me to work on with you is because I do think you're a curious person. You sent me this goose story.
That's true.
Because you're curious about more ways to play video games.
To waste my time.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All right. I have a couple of emails here that I really want to share with you. One that I've sat on way too long, and so I don't know if we can be of help anymore, but I really want to share it with you. First, though, I want to start with a topic that is very close to my heart. Now, as you know, I am in Orlando right now, and it is Monday. And Monday, of course, is garbage pickup day.
Oh, boy.
Back in Seattle. Genevieve, who's the most loving partner you can ask for, sent me a photo of the garbage cans on the curb last night after
Aww,
she put them out.
Sweet.
She said, I don't know if this can prove, in case they don't pick them up, I don't know if this is time-stamped enough to prove that I put them out there, but here it is, and you should
That's so funny because...
Sleep easy, Hutch Rhymes.
Because, like, I mean, I don't want to read too much into it, but that's exactly the kind of text I would send to Carrie, because there would be a thing that she usually does, and I'm doing it, and I'm being like, look, I'm doing it.
Because, I don't think in this case it was her being like, hey, look, I'm doing my job. I think it was her knowing that I went through that BS last week of them not picking it up.
Right.
So she took a picture to document it in case there's trouble with them down the line. Not like, look, Andrew, I'm doing
well,
it.
Well, no, but I mean, I guess what I mean is, like, when I am tasked with doing things in our house or going to the store and getting things, I usually do it wrong. So now I'll be like, I'll take a picture of the thing I'm buying, mostly so Carrie knows that I'm being like, they only had these ones.
Mm-hmm.
These are the only ramen options.
Yes.
So later, you know that I didn't just like not get the one you wanted. This was all of them. Let me document this.
Do you have any idea how many times I have called Genevieve at her important job in the middle of the day from the grocery store and said, they don't have your flavor of LaCroix. What is your second? I will list everything they have here. But anyway,
okay,
so today is
garbage
pickup day. Last week, as you know, I had issues. They skipped our house again when our landlords called the city. The city called the contractors. The contractors blamed us, said, you know, like, well, we didn't see it. They got to put it out there by 7 a.m., like all the things that we had done. I got this note from Elizabeth who says, regarding your problems, I was wondering if there's some way to send a tweet or email directly to SPU, that's Seattle Public Utilities. Send them a picture of your cans at the curb at 7 a.m. the day of pickup. It could even be an account that's not monitored 24 hours, but if they say it's not out, you have a time-stamped, possibly public digital proof it was out at 7 a.m. Just a thought. Good luck, Elizabeth.
That is so smart. Because honestly,
I might start a special Twitter feed.
Yes, and I will follow it.
Nobody has to follow. It's just like, this is a photo of it. This is a photo of it. And I'll just keep it. I'll never send it to them. Well, I guess I'll tag them in the first one. And then anything else that comes through, any other troubles, I'll be like, here's the tweet we sent at you.
That is so genius. And also, I mean, I don't know this particular contractor or I guess it would be maybe the city of Seattle or something. I don't know how much they have a social media strategy, but I can tell you this, if you want to get a quick response from any company, tweet at them.
Yeah.
They are so freaked out about like people tweeting, you know, hey, Xerox, this this toner wasn't good or whatever. It's like or airlines. I mean, I've been guilty of doing that before, just being annoyed at an airline and tweeting at them, and it's just like immediately someone's getting at you.
Yeah, and in this case I wouldn't even be doing it necessarily to like, I don't know, to harangue them, but just so that I can bring it up if I am questioned in the future, and then that is a natural public timestamp right there.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to create a new account for it. I'll just maybe create one. Well, I don't know,
though. Use your account.
Should I?
Yeah, because you have
Followers.
You have more followers there.
Yeah. Okay, but anyway, Elizabeth.
I'm excited, actually.
Bonvoy, my friend.
Indeed.
That is a great
No,
idea.
I'm excited to see these pictures.
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm legit excited to just, like, on Sunday night, like, right before I go to bed, when I finish my second pizza, I'll just look at your Twitter feed and I'll see your garbage out there. And I'll be like, yeah.
Everybody will rest easy. Okay, here is another thing close to my heart. This is the one where I hope we can still be helpful. This is from Chris in Ballard. It's about a parking situation. Today I had a bit of a parking incident that I wanted to get your take on. I was parallel parking on the Ave in Seattle. That's University Way, for those not familiar. It's a busy street with limited parking. I'll attest to that. I park on it almost every day. That's not true. Once a week. As I backed in, I noticed that if I pulled all the way back, there'd be enough room for another car in front of me. I like this guy. Can you ring your bell?
Yeah, yeah.
Leaving enough room, being conscientious. I love it, Chris. You're definitely working the refs here, and I'm all for it. Being a good neighbor, I pulled it all the way back, but I did end up giving the car behind me a gentle nudge on the bumper. I finished parking.
A love tap.
I finished parking and hopped out.
Love tap, baby.
I have had Deadbeat Club in my head for 4 days now.
Is
that
a
song?
Is that a B-52 song?
Yeah, it's off of that same record. Mm. Anyway, so you just gently nudge the bumper. I finished parking and hopped out without giving it much thought. Apparently, this move was witnessed by some dude in a different car driving down the street behind me. As he drove by, he yelled several F-bombs and A-holes at me. He was clearly incensed that I had bumped the car behind me and was walking away as if nothing had happened. I ignored him and went about my business without further incident. Am I totally in the wrong here? I have to admit that this is not the first time I've done this, and I generally don't think it's a big deal. Maybe it's because I'm not, maybe it's because I am from New York, but I am of the opinion that a tiny, unintentional bump while parking on a city street is totally fine and even to be expected. Bonvoy, Chris and Ballard.
Man, that's a, I think that's a tough one. Let me put it this way. When all of my cars used to be stone cold beaters, I wouldn't have cared. But, and maybe you can identify, because you and Genevieve have, you know, a newer, kind of nicer car now, mm-hmm. that, like, if, you know, if somebody backed into the Tiguan, I even gently, I'd be kind of bummed, I think, because it's, you know, like, if they scratch the bumper, mm-hmm. that's a thing, and then, like, am I going to get it fixed? Probably not. It just means my car is just kind of crummier looking. Mm-hmm. Like, and by the way, I have totally, I've done that, and particularly in the olden days when we didn't all have backup cams, mm-hmm. Although sometimes I find those backup cameras to actually be more, like, I don't trust them.
Oh, mine is great.
Do you have a beep too?
No, I don't have a beep.
Cause like,
I think that helps me because I am just eyeballing it. You can see the camera is just an angle where it's got the red line, which mm-hmm. is a suggestion, but you can also see the very edge of my bumper. Mm-hmm. So I know exactly how much room I have. It's cut down me doing these love taps by like 90%.
Love tap, baby! So, yeah, that's, I mean, obviously, Chris's car probably doesn't have that, presumably. But I think that I wouldn't yell the F-bomb at somebody if they did that to my car. But I think I would be like, hey, do you have to do that? I think that would be the level of mm-hmm. the level of frustration I would have would be like, do you have to do that? Because, like, here's the other thing. A lot of cars are made out of plastic now, and bumpers are made out of plastic. Like, the days of a, you know, chrome bumper. Mm-hmm. Which is just kind of indestructible. Those days are mostly over. It's
oh,
like,
that's funny. I would think a chrome bumper would be worse because that could potentially be metal on metal. I mean, for the record, I'm totally with Chris. I think, I mean, we are talking tiny, tiny taps. Like, not enough to make the car behind you even move. Like, don't get me wrong. If there's somebody sitting in that car and I end up doing a love tap, like, I'm going to feel, like, pretty embarrassed about it. And, like, that
love
would
tap,
be a
baby.
Thing. But, like, if nobody's in the car and if you're – I think that the majority of these, if I'm understanding Chris correctly, this is not something that would leave any kind of a mark because you are creeping slowly if you're doing it correctly and conscientiously. And I just think it's part of – I do think it's just part of parallel parking.
The problem, though, here's – and I don't usually go in for these arguments, but the issue to me is, like, who decides – how, like, where's the line between a love tap and something that's a little bit more aggressive? And even though the idea would be to not do any damage to the car, like, what happens if you do some damage to the car? What happens if you come in 5% too hot? Or
then if you do any damage to anybody else's property, you leave a note.
Right, obviously. But I guess I just feel like if we're all kind of bumping into each other's cars even a little bit, and that's just like, and again, I have done this in the past so many times, so I can't really talk, but I don't know. I feel like it opens up a kind of a Pandora's box of... And the thing about the plastic bumper is what happens with plastic bumpers is they're more prone, I think, to getting scratched. Mm. And then that's a thing.
You definitely will see those cars that you can tell the people who are not doing it right, because you will be driving in the city and you'll see somebody's plastic bumper and it's got a million little marks like that. Well, that person is clearly just like bumper carring it out up there. Like, I also, and I think it is just kind of a, you know, I'm not necessarily saying I'm in the right here. I'm just giving my opinion as I see it. And, you know, I'm sure you can make a lot of moral arguments that maybe I'm not doing it right. But, like, for me, and knowing that, like, every time I'm moving my car, I am parking it on the street. I'm either parking it on the street outside my house or I'm parking it on the street on the Ave or something like that. And for me, like, yeah, we bought a brand new car that immediately, like, the very first morning of ownership, I went out and saw that somebody had left a mark in our front bumper.
Oh.
And I was pretty bummed about it, but it was like, yeah, I mean, that's it. We park on the street. That's what happens to city cars. Now, it's different. Now, if you're somebody who doesn't live in the city, but you're visiting the city, this is exactly the type of thing that you're like, this is why I don't like visiting the city, because I live in a place where I park in a garage or a driveway, and then I go to a grocery store where there's a parking lot, and then I park in spaces. I understand that being another thing that people are like, well, I don't want to go to the city then, if it means that bozos like Andrew and Bonvoy Chris are going to be bumping into me like a couple of bumper cars.
Yeah. The other thing, too, I think is interesting is it sounds like you and Chris both, are you backing into cars ever so gently to make sure that you're leaving as much space in front of your car as possible? Is it about maximizing, or is it about trying to fit into a small space?
For me, it's squeezing in, because, oh. I mean, I will squeeze into spots that it would look like you could only get in there if you had a hovercraft.
You know, it's funny because I've had people leave notes on my car. This is when I lived in Seattle years and years ago, because I'm the same way. Like, one, I used to be a valet in college, so I do feel like I have I'm a okay parallel parker, like, and car parker in general, just because I've done it a lot. So I would park in spots, and, you know, you live on Capitol Hill or whatever. It's like, you just got to,
yeah,
your whole life is trying to find parking. And, like, I would get the car into a spot where I'm not touching either car in front of me or behind me, but there's very little room. But I was like, but it's a spot and my car fits in. Like, were my car to be touching someone's car, then that would be uncool. But if there's an inch between the person behind me and an inch in front of me, between the person and me and them in front of me, that seems like, okay, I'm parked in a spot. And I've had people leave notes, like, basically saying it was a jerk move to park in a spot that tightly. Mm-hmm. Is that a jerk move? I don't think it is.
Because you're not giving them room to get out. I mean, I guess,
but I mean, I feel like that's how parking works. It's like, if you can fit in there and you're not touching someone else's car,
yeah,
game on.
I'm kind of like that, too. I kind of think I have a real just city mentality about that. It is a little bit live or let die. Live and let die. That's not what I meant. It's like...
live and let live?
Live and let live. No, that's not what I mean.
Park and let bump?
Park and let... That's what I meant. Yeah, the old saying.
Park and let bomb. I got to stop singing songs on the program.
We Live and Let Die, we had a conversation about that song, and I said that I like the Guns N' Roses version better. We had that a couple of weeks ago. That led me back to Use Your Illusion 1, which I've listened to all the way through a couple of times.
What's the big hit off of Use Your Illusion 1?
Well, it's got Live and Let Die on there, and I think it also...
Patience off of Use Your Illusion 2?
No, that is off of Lies, Lies, Lies.
Whoa. Had no idea I was dealing with such a GNR head.
Your Illusion...
Patience, I think, is one of the great karaoke songs. I've never actually performed it, but yeah, I've seen it performed well. And it was like, maybe I just was in the right state of drunkenness at the time, but, like, I loved it.
Use Your Illusion 1 has The Live and Let Die, Don't Cry, November Rain,
wow.
And then a bunch of others that you may have heard
November of. November Rain, one of the few songs from its era, along with Take On Me, that's been viewed a billion times.
That's right, exactly, from 20th century, right? So, okay, those are the emails that I wanted to... I'm sorry we had to get into a fight about it, Luke,
I'm glad we got out of our system now instead of tonight at Waffle House in front of everybody.
Yeah,
that could have been really, really embarrassing. All right, what are we going to call the show? I wrote down, Oh No, You Bad Goose.
I like that.
And goose hole.
I wrote down blocking out the snorers.
Ooh.
That's not bad either. You also wrote down, what does that say up there?
That's, oh, no, you bad goose.
Oh, that's it up there.
That's how
I kind of like blocking out the snorers.
I do too.
Let's do that. I rewatched that video of that kid the other day because I linked to it in a newsletter. I have the closing music here.
I was going to play. How about we go with a little...
Oh, good. You want me to turn you up
here? Yeah, how about we go with a little GNR here?
Oh, okay. Man. I love this song so much.
I just wish it was recorded underwater.
Yeah,
it's my only,
too bad.
I mean, that's just a production note. But all right, well, my friend, we have about, I don't know, four hours before we have to be over at the Waffle House.
Is that true? Well, my God, you're right. Okay, no point today.
No,
because I didn't get to watch the full games, and we just got a lot of stuff on our plate.
And it's also, you know, our brand is not to talk about our teams when they've won.
Yeah,
it's to talk about it when they lose, and we're like,
right, exactly.
We're feeling emotionally wrung out. So. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We will be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Our 3,000th episode from the Waffle House is next. You'll hear from us, so look forward to that. And then, I guess, enjoy the rest of your Monday. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all, but especially us. But to all.
Bon voy!
There is no doubt you're in my heart now. Said woman, take it slow, it'll work itself out fine. All we need is just a little patience. Said sugar, make it slow, and we'll come together fine. All we need is just a little patience.
Power out.